Good morning. I'm Bill Watkins, the city manager here in Columbia. Since my appointment in 2006, it's been an honor to serve as Columbia city manager, and this is the fourth State of the City address that I've had the opportunity to make to Columbia citizens. This address is required by our city charter. The city manager has a yearly duty to submit to the city council a statement of, quote, recommendations which he or she believes will be of benefit to the city, and to let you, the citizens, know his or her opinion of the state of affairs in the community. This has traditionally occurred for many years immediately before the city council's annual retreat. Council retreat is a time to discuss ideas for new approaches to the community issues. This year, as in last year, the retreat will be held at the Lodge of the Four Seasons. It will start at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, June 4th, and end around noon the following Saturday, June 6th. The retreat is an open public meeting. The news media and other observers are welcome to, and usually do, attend the sessions. The sessions also help form the 2010 budget that I will be proposing to the council late in July. This year, I think all of us have put more intense focus on the budget. The 1980s was the last time there was a year of no revenue growth in Columbia. So this has been a long time since we as a community have had to face some of the economic challenges we'll be facing in 2010 and 2011. What I will be sharing with council at retreat are some of my recommendations for using city resources and tax dollars in a way that sustains what citizens have come to expect from their Columbia city government. In my book, sustainability is about more than climate control and energy. It's about using all of our resources wisely, about perhaps making choices that support our future while scaling back on those that reflect our past. It is, in my book, simply a time and an opportunity to rebalance. We've scheduled about 25% of our retreat time to discuss sustainable resource use. My recommendations to the City Council will include some of the following: crafting what we're branding as an SOS strategy, one that seeks opportunities to save city resources and use them more efficiently. Our challenge is to find a way to afford a new position, set efficiency benchmarks, be accountable for savings, and get a return on our investment. We will actively seek community participation in those efforts. We also will be talking about the need to create a task force to revise our stormwater utility funding structure. Our duties are to protect the public from flood damage and to keep our streams as clean as possible. We need adequate funds to inspect and maintain our stormwater drainage system, build projects, and meet state and federal environmental protection standards. Pressure on our stormwater system keeps building as the community grows and as environmental standards get tougher. The stormwater revenue system that's currently in place was set by voters almost 20 years ago. It's just not adequate for what we must do today and tomorrow. We'll talk about modifying our land disturbance ordinances based on council's specific guidance. Council has been discussing policy options for about 4 months. I told the chamber leadership retreat that for better or for worse, I think that the unintended consequences associated with the Cross Creek project will dictate our planning and development future for many years. We've talked with council over the last 4 months about ways to avoid another scenario like Cross Creek, and we prepared several options for them to consider at retreat. Each option has its own set of pros and cons and addresses things like permitting, zoning, steep slopes, tree preservation, stream buffers, and other related issues. We will discuss at retreat our continuing efforts to update Columbia's comprehensive development plans, which we started earlier this year. This initiative will update our process from our comprehensive plan through zoning and subdivision codes. Council has already directed the staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission to make this multi-year process thorough and inclusive, and is decided by resolution to appoint an advisory task force. We'll discuss at retreat how to appoint this group and get that process started. We'll also discuss at retreat implementing the demand-side management resources described in the city's Energy Integrated Resources Plan, or as we call it, the IRP. On its face, this is a reasonable step. If customers use less energy, there's less demand that our utility has to supply through either its own generation or through purchases from other suppliers. This requires upfront spending. And the key, I think, is to make sure that our citizens and our ratepayers get a return on their investment. In my book, we should not be spending electric utility resources without expecting a return on investment. We're fortunate to have secured a little more than $1 million in Department of Energy funding under the Federal Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant. We've been working with a citizens group composed of the Environment and Energy Commission and the Water and Light Advisory Board, and we'll be recommending to council 4 broad areas for funding. First, an Energy Star assessment of all city buildings and an energy efficiency retrofit for city buildings based on those assessments. I think the city has got to lead by example. We'll also be working to create a pilot project to create codes and incentives for energy efficient building design. I think this is innovative. Not only are we talking about our usual building code changes, but actual incentives to home builders and other developers to build energy efficient structures. And as we talked a little bit earlier, we'll be looking for partial funding for our SOS coordinator, the position that will seek opportunities for savings in city government. As we mentioned, the revision of our building codes is typically done on a 3-year cycle, and this is the year that we'll be updating them. There have already been meetings of a number of community groups with our Codes Commission to get this process started. Here and across the country, I believe we will see more codes adopted that require structures be built to reduce and conserve our use of resources. Pushing this focus on resources a little further, we'll spend time at retreat talking about the city government workforce. Since becoming city manager 3.5 years ago, one of my most important goals has been to recruit, hire, and retain the best possible employees we have with the funds available. We will complete our internal review of all job descriptions this summer, an important first step to assure that the descriptions represent our actual work. 2010, the upcoming fiscal year, is the fourth in the four-year process that we have to adjust job descriptions and pay scales. This review also tells us how city pay scales compare to what others are earning in the open market. I firmly believe, and I think anyone who is reading the literature will see that after we get through this downturn, which I firmly believe we are at or very near the bottom, and we will see an uptick in the upcoming fiscal year, that some of our workforce abundance that we have right now is going to disappear. We need to be ready for that. Because Council values the men and women who provide city services, I'm proud to say that our average pay scales are much closer to market levels than they were 3 years ago. And we've done that primarily because we have adjusted our lower and starting salaries. This year, in our fourth year, we will be looking at professional and supervisory staff. We're also in the second year of an evaluation system that bases pay increases on employee performance. The old former merit system did not adequately recognize our top performers, and employees believed it wasn't fair. I think our total compensation package is reasonable, prudent, and the best that we can do considering our financial constraints. We would all like to reward our employees with a raise. That's probably not in the cards this year. With each new retirement, and we continue to see more and more, we lose experience and institutional knowledge. This affects our ability to sustain services at levels that cities and citizens have come to expect. I will propose to the Council that we fund a three-year, what I'm calling a talent strategy, to identify up-and-coming supervisors and assure that when they get promoted, that they have the skills and attitudes needed to make the transition. I will ask an employee committee to identify core skills needed in our organization, both to do the job today and what we will need to do the job tomorrow. I will ask them to design an application process for eligible employees and, when appropriate, to help teach the next generation of city workers. We must invest to the best of our ability in a wide range of training using methods that fit employees' learning styles. We must pull as much knowledge as possible from our current workforce and preserve it as a reference for those coming up. This is my workforce capital improvement plan, or as I've called it, our talent strategy, the guide for building a human infrastructure for years to come. You know, every year we spend a considerable amount of time and resources looking at long-term capital needs. I believe we got to do likewise for our employees, our human resources. Consistent with Columbia's community vision, we'll also spend some time at the retreat talking about ways that we're all connected, informed, and engaged. As I see it, neighborhoods are the places where we choose to settle because of their look, feel, accessibility, and other factors. This is where I think most people feel most engaged. All taxpayers fund networks that keep neighborhoods connected. Our streets, sidewalks, utilities, trails, public transit bring services directly to your home and make it possible for you to travel from your neighborhood to work, shop, go to school, find leisure, and meet other folks. Taxpayers also support agencies that keep an eye on the networks, agencies like the police department and other departments that respond to citizen complaints and enforce the rules set by council that we all must live by. This is another form of engagement, but one that is unwelcome to a few, but I think beneficial to the vast majority. Council and staff will talk about making stronger and more effective connections and new opportunities for citizen engagement. I will propose as part of the budget to merge functions associated with neighborhood relations and property code compliance into a single, more efficient unit. These neighborhood-focused employees are now housed in six city departments. They do their work well, but I think need a stronger, continuous unity of purpose. I'd like to provide some new organizational tools as well to help them work more effectively with citizens and property owners and to enforce the rules. Police Chief Ken Burton intends to improve community connections and livable neighborhoods. He is reorganizing his command staff for greater accountability, and council will get a glimpse of his plans at the retreat. He's talking about improving the department's communications skills and forming partnerships for better problem solving. As outlined in our community vision plan and discussed by the council previously, I will suggest the council move to appoint a transit advisory committee modeled after our airport advisory committee that I think has done a great job in helping to get our airport back on track. The new transit advisory committee would focus on bus transportation. Public transportation is a critical link here in Columbia. I think most of us would agree. In most American cities, transit is not self-supporting and must be subsidized by something besides passenger fares. We use over $1 million a year in transportation sales tax funding for that subsidy, in addition to subsidies coming from the federal government. Rarely can buses run everywhere and at every time that people desire, due primarily to financial constraints. Our bus ridership has been climbing substantially in the last year and a half, and even with the recent fare increases. I know that the council is committed to make this very basic service accessible to more people. We need the good ideas of a citizen advisory committee, and particularly their help in advocating for and helping the community understand the complex transit issues we are facing in Columbia. By September 30th of this year, the end of our current fiscal year, we will have over $100 million in local infrastructure projects under management, and that's under internal management. This represents a commitment to voters who approve ballot issues financing roads, water, sewer, sidewalks, police, and fire. It is, I think, one of our biggest challenges to keep our assets current and in working order. They must be maintained if we're going to provide safe, reliable, and reasonably priced services to citizens, particularly in the long run. Just bringing all of our sidewalks up to date has a price tag in the tens of millions of dollars. Deferring maintenance to postpone spending is only a short-term strategy. We've seen other communities adopt that strategy only to find collapsed infrastructure that no longer can support public health and safety. For instance, we in Columbia here have much to do at our airport. Private common collector sewers in older neighborhoods must be replaced. We must do a better job of maintaining some of our athletic complexes, like the American Legion complex. We can't forget maintenance as we scramble to add new assets. I think the council members over the years have consistently supported and exerted their leadership to help maintain public infrastructure. And I can't remember a time on my 22 years of that this hasn't been a retreat agenda topic. Earlier this week, I announced the appointment of Mike Brooks as our new Economic Development Director and as President of Ready Incorporated, which is our partnership for regional economic development. I want to take this opportunity to thank Bernie Anders and his staff for all they've done to attract and keep businesses here, both in better times and worse times. They've laid the groundwork for future partnerships that will harness the power of research and the University of Missouri, which is our key strategic advantage here in Columbia. And we will be converting that strategic advantage to new jobs. I am very pleased that Bernie has agreed to stay on with Mike as part of our economic development staff. And just as a side note, with Mike coming on board, we are now at the same staffing level in economic development as we were in 1988 when I had the position. Like other communities, Columbia, I think, is well into the shift into a technology and knowledge-based economy. With our local and regional partners, we must continue to make long-term investments that sustain this area for years to come. But as we move our economy into this technology-based, we can't afford to leave behind our residents who are not prepared nor inclined to move towards technology. We must provide jobs for the folks in our community who only want to work or will only work in a manufacturing or a service environment. My goal would be to have the same job opportunities for my kids and my grandkids here in Columbia that they have in anywhere else in the United States. I know that council members support this kind of job creation and appreciate the investments needed to get the results. At the retreat, we'll discuss proposed economic development planning and strategies for the coming year, including our progress with downtown redevelopment. In conclusion, the city's fiscal condition is sound, but not comfortable. It's fair to ask why, I think, we still prefer progress to retrenching, which is what we're hearing in many other communities. On this point, I refer to former President Harry S. Truman. Harry said, "I don't believe in little plans. I believe in plans big enough to meet a situation which we can't possibly foresee now." We're very fortunate to have a community vision guiding our future, and in my mind, that's a very big plan. We're already implementing many of the strategies in that plan, and the actions that I am proposing will take us further. Why think small if it puts Columbia at risk of missing opportunities? As city manager, it's my duty and responsibility to look at the horizon and beyond, to advise council members and then implement council's decisions. This year, for the first time, we have posted all city council retreat materials online, the same as we do for all of our city council meetings. And I encourage you to review them at the city website, www.gocolumbiamo.com. Thanks for your attention today. I look forward to working with all of you in the coming months. Thank you. particularly in 11 and 12, that's not a comfortable position when you can't get done or afford to get done some of the things that you think you need to do. But I believe that our economy here is very sound. As I said earlier, I think we're at the bottom, and I think we'll see our way start to come back up. It's not going to be a quick rise. It'll be years before we see the types of revenues that we've seen 2 years ago.
And one follow-up question to that is, you also said no raises this year. Is that all across the board throughout the city?
Well, certainly we'll be looking at positions. We're looking at the fourth of our fourth-year review. We will be making commitments to continue to fund all of our pension systems, which will require a raise this year in pension contributions, simply because the value of our portfolios has declined in the market. And what we are required to do is to have a portfolio that can support future retirements. And in order to bring that up to speed, we're going to have to make some additional contributions. We think, for instance, the cost of doing nothing for our employees is about a 3.2% increase in personnel cost. Going into what we think is a budget, I don't want to use the word deficit, but gap, of about $3 to $4 million, that's a big chunk of change we've got to take off at the top. Will there be raises? Probably not across the board, but I think that as we continue and finalize our review of each positions, there will be a few where they will be recommended.
What does that mean for any open positions? I know, like yesterday we were talking with the police, they said they had 10 positions that were open that they're filling. Are we still going to fill those positions, or are they on hold?
Most of them, I think, will probably be filled. Certainly the police department positions have the green light to be filled. That's more of a process issue, and the fact that we've got five of our men and women who have been called up for Army Reserve or guard duty. We have put a couple positions on hold. We've not filled the ombudsman coordinator position, which I think is important. Council's directed us to look at a sustainability director. We haven't filled that one. And where we've had positions that have come vacant that I thought we could live without this year, we've not filled them. I would tell you that the budget next year probably will be based on filling all of them.
You said you're going to do a review of all job descriptions. Does this mean layoffs or just kind of reworking people's jobs? Or?
3 years ago, we outlined a program of reviewing all the city job descriptions. That hadn't been done in 10 years. And so we had people's job description not reflecting the duties and responsibilities that they did on a day-to-day basis. Rather than bring in an outside consultant, we elected to do it over a four-year basis internally with internal people. Not only does it save money, but I think our internal folks probably know positions better than somebody who might come in from Atlanta, New York, or LA. We will finish that up this year. Additionally, with that, we're looking at internal pay equity, and by that I mean, do you pay the garbage collector equivalent to their responsibilities and job duties and hardships comparable to what we might pay a police officer. I'm not saying they're equal, but there are ways that you can factor those in to come up with a relative value. We will be finishing that up this year. So the fact that we're finishing that up has nothing to do with layoffs or not layoffs. Our goal long term is to move, and in fact one of the items on the retreat agenda is what we're calling a compensation philosophy, is to move all of our positions up comparable to the market so that we're not substantially above, but we're not substantially below what it would cost us to go replace that person. That's a long answer to a short question.
Mr. Watkins, you said that by September 30th, there will be over $100 million in local infrastructure projects, and yet revamping the sidewalks will cost around, well, over $10 million, you said. And then also, I'm looking at this comment here about deferring maintenance to postpone spending is only a short-term strategy. Now, there are a lot of Columbia citizens who get around. I think of a lot of the citizens at Paquin Towers who get around using the sidewalks. Is there any immediate plans to fix the most critical sidewalks?
Council at Monday night's meeting directed that we take our supplemental community development block grant money received through stimulus and apply it all to sidewalk reconditions, particularly in the Paquin Street Walnut area. I think that's the first of what needs to be many, many, many sidewalk rebuildings. One of the topics at retreat is that traditionally the city has spent some very scarce sidewalk money for new sidewalks. I think there needs to be a balance. Yes, we need to fill gaps where we don't have sidewalks and they're critical, but we've got to start addressing the need just to replace sidewalks in older neighborhoods. Sidewalks is only the first piece of it. I think with the last ballot issue for water, we're getting our water system up so we provide good fire flows and good fire protection in every neighborhood in the city. But we've got things like curbs. If you go into the East Campus area and some of the Ward 1 areas, older streets, the curbs are deteriorating and need to be replaced. And we can kind of go through a lot of those kinds of maintenance things over years, and we've not set aside, in my judgment, significant resources to begin that maintenance effort.
Sure. Quick follow-up question. Do you have a personal goal for accomplishing some of these tasks?
Well, it's probably not in my lifetime, honestly, but I believe that if we could set aside $500,000 a year towards beginning to fix the worst of these problems, I think 10 years from now people would see a significant difference.
Thank you.
Anything else?
The SOS strategy, basically a cost-cutting efficiency type program, what kind of low-lying fruit to start off with do you see from that initially?
Well, I think it involves several things. It's not only an efficiency kind of program, because frankly, I think efficiency and doing more with less and finding new ways to do things is at the top of the agenda of all of our departments. Do we get it all right? No. Are there other opportunities? Yes. An example, for instance, in the IT department, we've been consolidating a lot of our operations so that we can do more mechanically with less people quickly. And again, that requires an investment. We spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a year in server replacements, for instance. But it's a good investment because it has a payoff, and that's what I think we need to be looking at. The SOS strategy is not only institutionalizing some of that, but it's also the efforts for sustainability and what a lot of people think of, energy sustainability, climate change, how do we get shifted over to a more sustainable fuel for things like buses and trash trucks. So there's a lot of outside-the-box thinking that's going to be necessary for that.
And one other follow-up question. MU has been talking about, you know, public-private partnerships, the research park, and so forth.
Yep.
Now with the new business development person, I forget the exact name, but he's going to be president of Ready as well, a public-private partnership there. What other outreaches to the private sector do you see, and as far as development and job creation going forward here?
Well, Ready is a partnership, and it's a partnership between four major groups: the city, the county, the university, and the private sector through the Chamber of Commerce. Time and time again, you know, government can only do so much. I think that our role as a government is primarily to provide facilities, shovel-ready sites, infrastructure, and a business environment that's conducive to starting a business, bringing a business here, expanding a business. You know, the university has a role, and certainly that role is in some of the IT, the research transfer.
So beyond just passive planning and zoning type rules. You're saying providing shovel-ready sites. What role do you think the city has in pushing developers or encouraging them rather than just allowing versus, you know, rules that they can and can't do?
One of the things that perhaps isn't well known is that industrial sites take a long time. If you look at the numbers, there's like, you know, one manufacturing new plant a year for every 10,000 communities that are seeking one. There just aren't very many. So that if you're a private developer and you've got a 50-acre site, it might be, it will be several years before you're able to sell that site. And faced with a number of communities who would make that site available at below cost, it's hard for a private developer to come out on top with something like that. I think organizations like KGEF, which we were able to help support through Ready in the city and whose board I sit on, and a private nonprofit charitable group whose focus is to develop these kinds of sites is important. But you'll notice that KGEF has to work with city, county, and other resource suppliers. The city council has agreed to extend a sewer line. I would tell you that an industrial site is not an industrial site and certainly not shovel ready if it doesn't have public sanitary sewer access. You know, the county last night agreed to zone 200 acres on that site. If you look at the vision plan that was adopted by this community said we'll have three shovel-ready sites at the 2010. I can tell you that the city is taking the lead on the third one. But it will be our responsibility to provide that infrastructure and do it in such a way that we still make it cost competitive.
Hi, I don't talk into microphones very often. In terms of, I was going to ask about the sidewalks. I realize while not all sidewalks in the city are supported by property owners, but I was wondering, is the reason that the city has to gather up enough money is because we tax, you know, the property owners are then, that money's recouped from the property owners after the sidewalks are repaired?
Yeah, see, I think we need to be looking at bringing existing sidewalks, ones that have already been paid for by property owners, up to an ADA standard or at least a safety standard. Mm-hmm. If any of you have had to push a baby carriage around town, you'll appreciate the fact that bump, 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 even though it's only a half an inch mm-hmm. or an inch gap, is really dangerous in some respect. I think the city has a responsibility for sidewalks, much like we do for streets. Once they get dedicated, then I think we should maintain the condition of the sidewalks. And we've got a lot of sidewalks where the bump, 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 bump is pretty darn loud.
Okay, that's good. Then I wanted to ask, too, in terms of, like, the provision of internet to neighborhoods, is the city going to discuss what was in – I was on the topic group that discussed this, and we sent for specific researched proposals regarding free internet to all neighborhoods using our utility lines. Is that something that will be discussed?
That is not, I think, on our agenda for 2010 or 11.
Okay.
You know, this in a personal comment. We own a very extensive fiber system here in Columbia. And it was built to hook our fire stations, our electric facilities, our water plant, water systems, and schools, and hospitals, and libraries together. The system is built. But the state legislature, in its wisdom, will not allow us to provide services to private folks for whatever reason. To me, it would be pretty simple to allow us, and fairly inexpensive, honestly, to allow us to provide very basic internet access. We did for years. We were a primary supporter of COIN, mm-hmm. But that dial-up service really became technologically unacceptable anymore, and the decision by the board of COIN was to disband rather than try to do something else.
Okay. And then the last question is, in terms of relating to yesterday's meeting also, in terms of talking about crime prevention and children and youth needing things to do in the summer, and of course the council is going to be talking about public transportation, but other than the talk about repairing our athletic complexes and such, will programs, summer programs for youth and children be discussed at the retreat?
Well, I think those are decisions that the council is going to have to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the budget for the city of Columbia, and like any other city, is a zero-sum game. I can solve the city's budget problem. All I have to do is do away with the bus system, the airport, and all of our social services funding.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have all the money we would need for cops and for everything else. Now, that's unacceptable. I'm not suggesting that by any means, so I don't expect to see that on headlines in the paper tomorrow. But I'm just saying it's about, you can add cops. I have no problem with saying we need more cops. It's just, what fire station do you want to close? The same thing comes with social services and social programs. You know, we can do those kinds of things if they're not being done in the community. I saw that, you know, Barbara's suggestion is that we need to look at areas that we're duplicating and pull back from those rather than areas that we're the sole provider. We spend $1 million a year in social services funding, and that doesn't include the money that the city puts into care or some of the subsidies into our rec services program. And again, it's just all about balance. I think you will see, at least I know you will see from the staff, a proposal to raise some recreation fees. And what we're trying to do is to spread those in the areas where the cost recovery is appropriate. But if we're going to provide the service and there's only a limited number of money, then there are some services that just may not get funded next year. I think that's the reality of being in an uncomfortable financial position.
Thank you.
Anything else? One more.
How has the city's progress been on some of the goals outlined last year, like reforming the building permit process and ramping up focus on crime and public safety?
Well, I think on the building permitting process, we've established the committee that we talked about. Haven't been a whole lot of building permits, honestly, in the last year. It's part of the consequences of our current financial condition. It's not working as well as I had hoped, and frankly, we had talked about the ombudsman being involved in that. That's not a position that we filled. So we're kind of trying to do it with the resources that we have now, and I think it's improved things substantially, but it's not exactly where I want to be. What was the other one?
Increasing a focus on, you know, more crime prevention, public safety.
Well, I think certainly from a dollars perspective, we continue to put money into it. If you look at the trend manuals, we put more money into public safety and really in police than in any other city department. Again, it comes back to, you need more cops? Yeah, but what do you want to give up to fund those more cops? My discussions with Chief Burton when we brought him on board was that we needed a new philosophy on how better to use the resources that we have now. And I think Ken's going to discuss a number of those at the retreat. Part of that involves just getting accountability down into the ranks, and it's going to be some change in command structure and people. One of my complaints to the police department has always been that it seems that in certain events we can have all the cops there that we want to have. We had 33 officers, 33. At the incident where the guy was going to jump off the Providence Street Bridge. Now, how come we can get 33 officers there when we may need an officer to respond to a citizen complaint, and, you know, we say, no, they're not available. And what Ken will be talking about is a very basic concept. You're going to see some changes in how the beat structures are put out. You're going to see a much more data-driven policing. We're going to put the officers where the problems are. And if any of you have played soccer, you know that you try to stay in your position as opposed to go where the ball is. And the little kids, which I used to coach, we used to call it herd ball because you get all 11 kids right into the ball instead of somebody staying back and watching the defense. And we've got to get to that kind of mentality in the police department. I think Ken is going to outline a plan to make it happen. Is it going to happen tomorrow? No. I think his costs are going to be pretty high, but I think it's some things we've got to do. Ken also makes a good point. You know, we spend a lot of time in solving crimes. Our crime solution rate is well above national standards. But, you know, the guy that had his garage broken into would feel a whole lot better not having had that happen than knowing we caught the guy 3 days later. And so the point about crime prevention is important. A lot of that is just, a lot of that is just.